About having baked potato flavoured crisps.
They're over there. There's a bag over there.
Really?
Yeah.
Baked potato flavour. I'm thinking potato. Surely these crisps are going to taste of baked crisps. Potato anyway.
Yeah.
Fried potato, maybe.
Oh, no. It looks like baked potato. It's a squid.
They are easy to confuse. It's all the it's all the tentacles, isn't it?
Did you have any of the fried egg crisps?
Are we rolling, Tom?
Yeah.
Great.
Was that good chat?
Welcome to another episode of Under the Cloche. We're here in the pub. We've got another excellent guest lined up. Before we get to that, boys, good week. Any standout moments, good or bad?
Ooh. I rearranged my barbecue area in the garden.
Okay, so that's bad. Anyone got a good one?
This is content, mate.
Incredible dadmin.
That is.
Yeah. Dadmin.
Wow. I nearly had my favourite curry. Went back to Hertfordshire, see some family. Whilst in St Albans, thought we'd go frequent our favourite curry house. So popped in, got a
Which one?
It was our local.
So you popped on in.
oh my God. Picked up our favourite curry, thought, take it to my nan's house.
To your nan?
To your nan.
Keep going.
Yeah.
We got in. We sat down at the table and Hayley goes, you know what, I'll just keep these warm in the oven. So she pops over to the oven, puts the oven on, pops them in the oven. Half an hour goes by because the chat was so good with Nan. Mm-hmm. We forgot about the curry. I went to go to the oven to go pick it up. Turns out Hayley had put the oven on full power.
No.
250 degrees. To keep the Indian warm.
That'll do the job.
And she'd not only done that, she'd also put the curries in their Tupperware containers in the oven.
No.
So I have a photo of, I've never seen anything like it.
Just drippy plastic.
Drippy plastic covering every ounce of my beautiful curry and my nan's oven that has now been tainted. Yeah, so we then spent the rest of the time, I went down to the curry house, I went to Cuffley Kebab Shop to get
to cover
our barracks, and then spent the rest of the evening scraping plastic off the bottom of my nan's oven.
Excellent.
Oh, wow.
I love a story that was so nearly the best.
Yeah. £90 worth of curry we wasted.
What?
We went, it was one thing, we never go there. We thought, you know what, we're going to go all out. So we got all of our favourites, all the trimmings.
How many of you were there?
Four.
What?
We went all out.
Although,
all
to
the
be fair, there's nothing better than leftovers when it's somebody else cooking.
Yeah, it was the best. It's our favourite. And Hayley screwed it up.
Oh wow.
But
I'm
going to be dining on that. For so long as well.
Not that curry, you're not.
Such a normal household that you even mess up takeaway.
I know. That's a first. That was a first.
So on to today's guest, Cyan Anderson, mm-hmm. author, restaurant owner, record label owner, radio DJ, presenter, the list goes on. Fascinating person. But what's interesting is food kind of seems to play a big part all throughout those successes. Anyone got any questions or things in particular that Baz and I should ask?
Definitely, because straight off the bat, Octaves, the restaurant in Stoke Newington, I booked a table for two last night, and you all have wife and kids to get home to. So
I had plans.
That's
I was
true.
Out.
Yeah. You went. You were out.
I was out.
So I went with another friend, and we went and had the amazing like spread of just like dozens and dozens of little dishes.
Just Caribbean
story time of Ebbers.
Caribbean dishes, ackee fried rice, oxtail braised, saltfish fritters, rice and peas. But the question for her.
Okay.
What on earth goes into that goat curry? Because it was so generous on meat and goat, but the flavour was so good.
Okay.
I want the recipe. Yes, please.
Good, because seeing as this is going out before the episode, was it good?
The goat curry was amazing.
Okay.
And actually, the whole vibe, like who we were served by, like great energy, a very, very, very strong rum sunrise punch.
Oh, you brought some of that, really?
Which I bought an extra bottle of at the end than we have for our pub. But yeah, like good vibes, great food, great service, and a standout goat curry.
And obviously the big question that we want to know is, will you be seeing the friend again?
Question. Yeah. Was this a friend via app? Did you swipe on this friend?
I have been known to use research trips for the show as good date options.
Yep. Yep.
But no, last night was just a friend, and I absolutely will be seeing him again.
But they kissed anyway. Please enjoy our episode with Cyan Anderson. Cyan, Cyan, welcome to Under the Cloche.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers.
Cheers.
We're starting off strong.
Yes.
With your own rum punch.
Eyes. Who's going first?
I'm going first.
We're smashing it.
Oh, wow. So we've started in the pub by drinking your drink from your Octaves restaurant, the Sunshine Rum Punch.
Yes, Sunshine Rum Punch.
That is unbelievable.
Doesn't it taste like sunshine? Like, if you could bottle up sunshine, that is what it tastes like.
That is everything I need in life right now.
It's
quite
lethal. My eyes are watering.
Already. I think everyone's saying Ben already polished off a bottle last night.
Yes.
And then took this from your restaurant.
Yes.
It made life somewhat awkward.
Yeah, right. So Ben visited your restaurant.
Ben did.
Covertly last night. Didn't tell you or anything.
Undercover.
And then acted shady throughout the whole evening.
Yes, basically, pretty much.
What happened?
I mean, so I like to go over and see everybody and explain the concept to them of how the restaurant works, because it's the first ever all you can eat in London. So I like to explain to people how things work, and, you know, it's always nice to tell them what drink goes well with the meal. So I came over and I introduced myself and, you know, said how the restaurant works. And I said, everybody likes the Sunshine Rum Punch, so, you know, that tends to be the drink to get if you're a drinker. If you're not, the mocktail version is great, and you get four glasses. So if there's two of you, you know, just be easy.
Yeah,
you can take it home if you need to, because it's quite lethal. And they were like, yeah, great, fine, all good. And then halfway through, someone's like, oh, the customer wants to speak to you. So I'm like, cool, gone over. Oh, do you have an off license? And I'm like, what's that? Like, oh, just like to take the bottle home. You mentioned we could take a bottle home, but we wanted to buy a new bottle to take home. So I'm like, yeah, sure. But in my head, I'm thinking, what's an off license?
Yeah. Like, is this guy from the council? Yeah. He looks like he should be from the council.
No, genuinely. So I've gone to the girl at the bar and I'm like, somebody's asked if we have an off license. Like, she's like, what? And I'm like, can they buy a bottle to take home? And she's like, well, we give the bottles to take home and we're on all the Deliveroo and Uber apps with the alcohol. So yeah.
What?
So I was like, okay. But there wasn't like 100% certainty in either of us. But we was like, we're going to do it anyway because I've already said yes. And then the thing that got me was when I went over and had that conversation, I was taking the bill payment. And I said, do you want receipts, them both? And they said, no. But can we put the bottle on a separate transaction?
Oh.
So when I did the bottle, it was like, oh, can I get a receipt? And I was like, that's it, he's from the council. He's from the council.
and then
it was an email receipt. So I was like, he's from the council and he's got us. I've just sold him a bottle to take away. Like, I'm an off-licence, with an off-licence, and I don't have an off-licence, and we're going to get shut down. And then I was like, all sorts of panic. So I was like, guys, he just like got a receipt and he must be putting it on a business thing. So to expense it, this must be like a business bottle. Who gets a bottle of rum punch for their business? And everyone's like, calm down, you're freaking out. Then we looked over and he walks out and he's taking a photo of the place. As he's walking. So I'm like, guys, we're getting shut down. And I genuinely believed it until I walked in here and saw him.
Oh, that's amazing. Like,
hang on. Don't you work for the council as well? No.
Why didn't you just ask, can I take this home, please?
Hi. Sorry.
Because they drank it.
You're coming on our podcast tomorrow. Oh, nice to meet you, Ben. Yeah. What is he doing? What is he doing? I think it's because he says he wasn't on a date, but we think he was on a date.
Yeah.
And therefore, he doesn't want you to be able to spill...
Confirm that he was definitely on a date.
He was definitely on a date.
He was giving date.
Well, the answer to your question, who buys a bottle of rum and then takes it to their business? Hello!
Hi.
Welcome. I mean, what an intro.
That is the best way to start.
I'm glad we've made a positive impact on you already.
Yeah, I can't wait to go back and be like, see, I told you all there was something dodgy about those guys.
Yeah.
They were from here.
He is shifty in his general behaviour, but I love the fact that, yeah, you've instantly picked up on that.
Yeah, but how good that you get to just like go out and have a meal and a rum punch as part of your job.
Yeah, put it on the company card.
Yeah, right. You are paying for that bottle of rum.
Especially when it tastes this good as well.
Yeah.
So what's in this?
There's a lot of Ray and Nephew. There's a lot of Captain Morgan. Some vodka.
Ray and Nephew.
Is there any fruit in it?
Lychee. Okay. Fruit punch. Okay. Some orange juice. A bit of pineapple juice. And some secret ingredient that I won't reveal because it's mine.
Yeah. I've had some nights ended by Ray and Nephew's rum.
Yes.
Like, just see you later.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So I actually don't drink this. I'm drinking it now. Maybe like one every 6 months is fine.
Okay.
But the Ray and Nephew will tip me over the edge. It does that to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so when I have it without the Ray, So we have like a special bottle for me in the shop, Thursdays to Sundays. It's not that size bottle. It's a 500
milliliter one. Yeah, a smaller one.
But there's a smaller one just for me that doesn't have Ray in it. And it says Cyan, no Ray.
Functional.
Yes.
Wow. Like you slightly, can run a business.
Slightly.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're well into this already, yeah, but going back right to the beginning. I mean,
I've got a question to ask.
What?
Oh, you know how this works.
Sorry, yeah.
We have obviously a wonderful
drink. You're still holding my hand.
I'm committing now. So we have a wonderful drink in front of us. But one thing we ask all of our guests, it's a weird question and it needs some explaining. But I'll start with the question. What's your foodgasm? To explain, we are talking about a dream scenario. So picture your location, who you're with, what's happened before, what's going to happen after the meal. But basically, what's the environment that leads up to the ultimate meal, and what is that meal?
So I think I would be, let's say Thailand. I've always wanted to go to Thailand.
Okay.
But with the aesthetic of like a jerk pan in Jamaica and Hellshire Beach.
Wow.
Okay.
So we're on a beach.
Yeah.
Definitely on a beach. Okay. We're on a beach in Thailand with a Jamaican jerk pan.
Nice.
Sure. Why not?
I need a yard man there.
Okay.
As well. Yeah. And lobster.
Yes.
Taken from the sea.
Yes.
Maybe not that sea, maybe hell shit. So normally you would have like a festival, which is kind of like a dumpling, but a sweet dumpling. So I wouldn't like a festival. I would like a waffle, some maple syrup. I would like a side salad with mango and pomegranate. In it.
Wow, okay, we're getting specific.
This is great.
Okay. Yeah. Like this is the dream meal. And a Sorrel Red Stripe beer.
Yes, one of my favourite beers.
Cold.
Yes.
Cold as hell. And maybe some jerk sauce, but like on the side with some fries on the side. The skinny fries, not the fat ones.
Yes.
So I can just dip as I'm going along.
So you're drizzling
the jerk sauce.
Yeah.
And maybe some of the lobster. Not all of it, just every now and then a little dip.
Wow.
And I want maple syrup on the waffle. Because you know that you get like chicken and waffle and stuff like that. I don't want that. I want lobster and waffle. And I've never been anywhere.
That might be
the next move. Lobster and waffle restaurant.
Listening to what you've just described, you've essentially taken every part of my soul and put it into a dish. Like all the things that I think mine would be Korean fried chicken.
Oh, God.
But like the Southeast Asian flavours,
100%. Yes.
I went to, in California, there's like this Mammoth Lakes, which is just beautiful, massive, quiet lakes. But if you go at the right time of the year, it's sunny, it's stunning, green, but then you can see the snowy top mountains in the background. Oh,
stop.
I'd definitely be drinking lager.
Yes.
Yeah, and Thailand.
Ooh.
Thai
this
flavors.
So
oh
mad.
My goodness! Right, we're on.
This is so mad.
This is our first shared foodgasm.
Well, if I didn't say Thailand, I was going to say that somewhere you can ski, but with the jerk pan. That would have been my second.
Do you want to come into my?
We've got to do it.
As well.
Okay. We have to do
we'll
it.
Share.
We have
we'll
to
do a time share
bring
of
the
foodgasms.
Jerk pan, right?
you bring
everything else.
We'll bring the mountains. You bring the jerk pan.
And we got to live this out.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. What about you?
I did not see that coming. Listen, this isn't about me.
Okay.
This isn't about me.
No.
No,
you can save yours.
I'll save mine for another time because it's nothing like your.
Right, so we're back, like, obviously, from your entire sort of professional, maybe personal journey, we can see food plays a massive part. Did that start young? Was that family? Was, like, how did that come about? Or was your love of food, was that something that sort of developed later on in your life?
No, so my mum is a massive entertainer. She's always got people around the house. She's St. Lucian, so it's how she grew up. She has a lot of brothers and sisters. So for her, it was always food and people. Mm. And she just brought that into my household. There was always people at the house and there was always some sort of food. And she's just a whiz in the kitchen. Like the way that she can knock something up in 20 minutes is just insane. So I would always come home and the house would be full of people and everyone would be eating, everyone would be drinking, everyone would be listening to music, normally reggae music. And that's just how I grew up.
Yeah.
It wasn't till I turned 24 and I got pregnant and I found out I was pregnant when I was 5 months pregnant. So the next couple of months was very much so like, oh, you're having a baby.
Yeah.
And I didn't drive. I didn't have any baby things. I'd never held a baby before. So there was all these things that I had to like quickly get my head around. And then about a year after I had Elijah, I was still living at my mum's. She'd got her partner. It was getting very crammed in the house. And I was like, I have to move out. So I did that, moved out. And then I was making all these meals, but it was like the standard meals because my mum always used to cook everything, and she'd cook for breakfast, lunch and dinner the next day. She'd cook a little bit of everything. You'd have like, she'd cook some curry goat, some rice, some mac and cheese, a side salad, dumplings. She'd cook everything.
What am I bringing?
I'm actually growing up.
Everything. Yeah. Oh. So when I've moved into my own place now, I'm like, okay, well, I could make the basics, you know, like corned beef and rice type of things that I had growing up and kippers and whatnot and so forth. But I have a child and he doesn't like my version of these things. And my partner at the time, a Nigerian, with lots of sisters, mum and dad, big food house. And it's like, well, I can't just give you chicken nuggets and chips. I can get away with giving it to Elijah because he was like, I don't know, maybe two at the time. But I can't get away with giving it to you and I don't particularly want to eat this either. So I started trying to make the dishes that my mum would make, like curry chicken, rice and lentils, and just like failing miserably. And I'm like, this all looks good when she's doing it. I'm in the kitchen with her my whole life watching her do this. Why can't I?
Yeah.
So it just became like an itch that I just had to scratch. Like I have to make this dish and it has to taste exactly how my mum tastes. And Elijah just wouldn't eat the food because he's just like, I miss grandma's food. He wanted grandma's food. That's what he wanted. And one day I made salmon and he was like, it's slimy, and he just pushed it away. And then my partner was like, yeah, this is not it. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so embarrassing. I never want this to happen to me again. So I was like, I'm going to get good at this quickly. And then my household just became like my mum's. Everyone would come around for food because I'd like mastered specific dishes.
Thing is, you do take so much of your upbringing for granted until you have your own kids.
Yeah.
And then it's on you to deliver that experience that you had.
Yeah, you're like, what corrections from my upbringing am I going to provide for my kid, and what good things am I going to take from those? And you actually genuinely start thinking about that.
I
rank third in my family to Austin's favorite cooks. So my little boy, five, I'm by far, I'm happy to say, by far the best cook in my family.
Oh, you're happy to say that?
Happy to say that. Yeah. My family cooking is abysmal, but yet my mum still managed to be, she's top dog.
It's madness, isn't it?
I know, I don't know what she's doing, what she's putting in his food.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's just a well, basically.
It's grandma.
It's grandma food.
Yeah, it's grandma food. That's all
fair.
It's more the obsession with grandma than anything else. Like, he was obsessed with lasagna. If I make him lasagna, he's not touching it. I don't like lasagna. I'm like, yes, you do. God. You eat grandma's lasagna all the time. Then I start to get a complex. Like, is it just my lasagna? And I'm like, no, it's just you and your grandma.
So did you then sort of tap up your mum for like cooking advice or a crash course?
No.
So how did you master the dishes?
I had to guess. So I bought all the ingredients that were in her cupboard and I just smelt them and was like tasting them and was like, all right, a bit of this, a bit of that. And I had to trial and error everything. Like, we was probably having curry chicken and rice for like about 2 weeks in my house till I was like doing it every day till I got it right. Wow. And then I got it right and then it was like, we never had curry chicken again.
Why didn't you ask her?
Because my mum, she's like, she can't wait for me to ask her. She cannot wait.
Right. Okay. Yeah,
Oh, now you need mum to come and cook for you still, right?
Okay, mummy issues.
Refused. And then when I did my first cookbook, I said to everybody, like, right, you each take a couple of recipes and everybody try them out because it was lockdown. So in your house, get these recipes, try them out, make sure the recipes work. My mum, no, not like this, not like that. Oh, that didn't taste good. Like, I could have cooked that a little bit longer. She probably only admitted that she liked a dish to me maybe about 6 months ago. Yeah, and it's been 8 years since I had my child. And it was in the last 6 months, and she was like, oh, that was really nice. And I was like, well, not undercooked, not overcooked, not too spicy. No, it's just really nice. And I'm like,
you've done it.
Has she been to the restaurant yet?
Yeah. Okay. She's at the restaurant all the time.
Ratings?
Yeah,
she
comes in and she's like, because some of the recipes at the restaurant were hers. So like the saltfish fritter recipes, stuff like that, were mum's recipes. So now that she works somewhere else, I now make the saltfish fritter mixes. And when she comes in and she's like, oh, I'll have some fritters. I'm like, oh my God, she's going to hate it. And then she's like, oh, that was good. And I'm like, oh, done it.
I've arrived.
I've got mum's approval. But there was no way I was asking her. Absolutely no way.
Wow.
No.
So your upbringing is fascinating. And I grew up in South London. And you got into journalism was the first kind of like work you had. What I can't work out, you meant journalism, starting your own, was it PR?
PR companies.
Yeah. DJing.
Marketing. Yeah, DJing.
There's so much that like precedes the food side of things. At what point was kind of Where was food on your journey? What was the plan from day one? Was there a plan for food at all?
No, there was no plan for food at all. The cookbook that I released myself, Cyan and Her Son, which was me and my son, happened because during lockdown, everybody that was a DJ or entertainer, they were doing these like Instagram live videos of them DJing in a room. And I was like, I can't do that. Like, I don't feel happy enough to do that, first of all. And second of all, I don't want to. And it just felt really insensitive of me to force it just for the sake of, oh, I need to keep my DJ self relevant. And because DJ is my passion, and yes, it pays me, but it's not my main job at that time. It was marketing at Parlophone Records. I didn't need to financially carry on DJing online. I was still on radio. I didn't need to do that in order to keep my bookings up or my presence up or anything like that. So I thought, you know what? Just stick to what you're doing, which is marketing. Don't try and force it and do this because you don't want to and you don't have to. So I didn't. But what that meant was, because we wasn't going out, there was nothing for me to put on social media whatsoever. Right, yeah. So I just came off social media for months. But then people were like, where are you? What's going on? What are you doing? And I'm like, I'm here, but I just don't have anything to share with you. And around that same time, because we didn't know how long lockdown was going to be, I was just giving my son like chicken nuggets and chips. And, you know, you go in there and do your schoolwork. I'll go in there and do my work. And when it got to about 3 months, I was like, we can't keep having this food. Like, we have to actually start to make mealtime. This is going to go on for a long time. I just made a decision that, okay, we're gonna cook together. We're going to be really intentional about spending breakfast, lunch and dinner together as our time in between your schoolwork and my Zooms and whatnot and so forth. So we did that and I thought, oh, I can film this. This is natural. Yeah. This isn't forced. So I was just filming me and my son cooking, and then people, I put it on my highlights on Instagram and people were like, oh, can I get the recipe? So I was like, yeah, sure. I mean, we've got nothing but time on our hands. So I'm sending out the recipe to people. And then one day this girl goes, right, I'm seeing somebody and he's coming over for the first time for a date. And he DM'd me and was like, had food with this girl. She used one of your recipes.
We're married.
Incredible. We'll be seeing her again.
Amazing.
And then she messaged me and was like, oh my God. Like, he said he loved it. I don't know if he's like telling the truth or not, but he said he's coming back and whatnot and so forth. They're now married.
Oh, yes.
They are now married. Aww. Yeah. And so people was just like asking for recipes and then telling me all these amazing stories.
What was the dish?
It was definitely rice and peas.
Yeah.
But I can't remember what it was with.
But that's my favourite thing about, like, in the world that we live in, talking about food, is the power that food has kind of beyond media. Like, we publish recipes all the time. We've done a few books, obviously, the show. But the biggest compliment, the most gratifying thing we get is when people come up to us and say, I cooked your recipe at home.
Yeah.
And the amount of times we've had people saying, your recipe got me laid. Like, it's honestly, it's the best compliment ever.
It happens. It happens. Like, food brings people together so much. So that was the beginning of it. And then when that happened, I just started sharing more recipes. And then people were like, oh, we just need a book. And I was like, do you know what? It's locked down. Me and my son are going to do it. I got an iPhone. I got all the ingredients in. And yeah, I was insufferable. He didn't want to see a camera again after. And every mealtime was like, oh, wait 20 minutes for me to take a picture of the meal.
And then you can eat it cold.
How old was he at the time?
He's 8 now. So it's been about 5.
How did Elijah take to that as an idea? Like, you've gone from eating what we're eating at the moment.
Yeah.
Now I'm changing direction. We're going to spend this time together.
Yeah.
Did he take to it enthusiastically?
He loved it.
Yeah.
Because it was a problem in the house that we wasn't spending quality time together.
Yeah.
It wasn't until we had the physical copies and I was like, right, we've got like 200 pre-orders and they all want a signed copy from you. He's like,
oh, yes.
I have to sign all of these. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, mom. And I'm like, yeah. And then he went to school and they're like, oh, you've got this cookbook. And then he was like, mom, am I famous? And I'm like, you're famous. And he's like, oh my God, I'm famous. And then he started to understand that, okay, I've got a cookbook out. This is a thing. And
we've got the wrong person on the,
exactly,
on the podcast.
Completely,
we need Elijah.
Completely, literally. And he got stopped in the supermarket once in Sainsbury's. And someone was like, oh my God, it's Elijah. And he was like, hi. And they was like, hi, can
you sign this banana?
And it was mad. And I was like, I don't know this person. I didn't know what to do. I was like, I actually don't know you. And then they DM'd me after and was like, I'm so sorry that I just like ran up and hugged your son, but like I've watched him grow on the internet and now I've got his book and like, I can make his recipes with my child, because there's recipes for kids in there that you make with your kids. And she was like, and yeah, I just had to run over and give him a hug. And I was like, oh, so I definitely didn't know you. And that was strange.
But the thing is, during that time, it forced us all to be living in that moment a little bit, and what it almost does, it crystallizes that period of time. Because now we can all look back, and you look back at it, well, mostly with negative memories, but now with some fond outlooks. And I still find us, we look back over our past videos from that period and before and after. And I almost treat them almost like family albums in a weird way.
Like they were a moment in time. I was so stressed out because I was like, we make videos together.
Yeah.
And that's how we run this thing.
Yeah. It almost like,
what are we going to do?
It almost unearthed the businessy side of what we do in terms of like you had to, we had to change the formats that we're shooting, change the structure. Mm. So when you look back over the videos that we created that period of time, they are so true to life and where we all were physically and emotionally during that time. The fact you now can look back and you've got a cookbook of that period of time, that is the best family album ever.
Yeah, madness. Absolute madness.
Was it always all stuff that you'd grown up eating?
Yeah.
Or, yeah, yeah. Okay.
But then with my own twist. Yeah, because in the music industry, I ended up going to places like, you know, Nobu or Rockar and everyone wants to do bougie. So I'd have like black cods and then I'd be like, is this the only way I can eat this? Like come and dress up and go to Nobu and spend hundreds of pounds. It's like, surely this can't be the only way, but I like these flavours. So I then just researched the flavours. And then when I found like stuff like marin and miso paste and stuff, I was like, well, I'm going to add this to...
Miso paste is a game changer.
Yeah, it's such a game changer. I was like, well, I'm going to start adding this to the dishes that I make and see what they taste like. Because why can't I have like a miso chicken? Like, you know, why can't I have, you know, my own variation of stuff I like with these flavours? And I also learned how to make black cod, but I just put my own spin on it and put it in the first book. So I was just a little bit like, you know, I don't want to keep spending all this money on that. I want to bring those flavours in to this as well. And so that just made a lot of sense for me because it's like, I very much so love Asian food.
Yeah.
So it's like a modern day kind of Caribbean, Asian fusion.
You create your own cuisine.
Yeah. And just had that in my house like all the time.
Let's backtrack a little bit. We've focused everything so far on very much like a passion for food. But you said like when you first started your professional careers, food wasn't really in the picture. It was all very much business first. You've been building businesses along the way. With the business hat on and food.
I don't have a business hat on for food yet.
Really?
No, everything sort of just happened, you know? So I did the first book and then people were getting in touch talking about wanting to publish a book proper because that was like a limited edition run that I did on my website. And then because I did the first book, I was doing pop-up kitchens for people to come and taste the food. And people were coming and they was tasting it and then we were just like having a lot of fun with it. I started to incorporate musicians. So doing like big pop-up events where I was doing the food and in one room there was food and in one room there was artists performing. And then everyone was like, you've got to open a restaurant, you've got to. And I was like, okay, possibly. And then one of my good friends passed away, Jamal Edwards. And at his funeral, our other friend Ed Sheeran was like, this restaurant idea that we keep talking about, when are you going to do it? And I was like, not till like my 40s. Like, I want to get out of the music industry and then let that be the kind of last thing that I do. And he was like, do it now. And I was like, no way. He's like, I'll help you, leave your job and do it now. And I'm like, this is not a good idea, Ed. And he was like, we're all going to do one thing that we were going to do kind of towards the end of our careers. We're all going to do it now. And I was like, all right, whatever, mate. And then the next day he put me in touch with his team and was like, help us set up this business. And I was like, okay. And then they were just like all hands on deck, like, right, you need to get this, you need to get that, you need to get this, you need to get that. And I was like, cool. So I just started doing it because I just had it in my head that, do you know what, he's right. Like, life is too short. We didn't know that Jamal was going to pass and he didn't get to do all of the things that he wanted to do. And I just really just like meditated on that and was like, do you know what, why am I waiting until I'm 40? I might not make it to 40. If I've got the means to do it and the help to do it now, let me just do it. And so that's where the food journey really came about, the restaurant, this second cookbook, and me going, actually, I really love this. And I've done 16 years in the music industry. I've done the journalism, I've done the marketing, I've done the PR. There's not much more I can do there. It's kind of for a new generation to take over that kind of stuff. So actually, let me go head first into this because I just absolutely love it.
That's just amazing. The urgency.
Yeah.
It stops us doing so much stuff, being like, oh, well, we kind of need to have everything set out and played in front of us before we go into that because, you know, like, oh, you know, so many different connotations of where things could go. But actually the sense of urgency of you get – you get one shot at this, one life, do it now because you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. And also being able to say, Ed Sheeran made me do it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty good comeback, isn't it? Yeah. It's a good answer.
He came 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. Oh. It was so amazing to see it come full circle. It was the anniversary of Jamal's passing around that time that he came. And it was like, this has really come full circle from us being at the funeral and you telling me to do it to you and your wife now being here and us just kind of celebrating the space and celebrating each other and our friendship and stuff. It was really emotional.
I've never said this before, but when weird link to a story, Jamie and I went for breakfast with Jamal at Dishoom. Must have been about a decade ago, I reckon, probably. But the only thing we spoke, because again, we both kind of started on YouTube at similar sort of times, and we're trying to do similar sort of things. And the conversation back then was very much about like combining food and music, and he always spoke about his love of food and said there'll be something to do one day. We were in that phase. We were so preoccupied by the business focus on stuff. We weren't focusing on the passion thing, I don't think, back then as much. It was just kind of building.
At that time, we'd all left our real jobs and then dived into this thing with potential. You're like, we have to make this work. But you can get so focused and preoccupied with, well, we've got to make this work to pay the rent first, that the thing that got you into it in the first place was the passion.
Yep.
That actually you need the passion to make it successful. Yeah. So we had a full circle as well moment, didn't we?
Yeah. But it's nice, like we tried a cookbook. What was it? Well, it was during COVID, isn't it? So just before COVID. Oh, this is a bad story. Just before COVID, we made a cookbook called Cooking to the Beat, which was about combining food and music. The idea of going, we're gonna launch a bunch of music tracks.
Whose idea was this?
This is my idea. It's our worst-selling cookbook of all. I think I've got a reason, why.
The recipes are amazing.
Photography looks great. The book I'm really proud of. But the concept was about like playing music in the kitchen and cooking a dish to that represented that track.
Yeah.
Did a book on it, self-published it, really happy with it. We launched it the week before COVID hit. And of course, the last thing people really want to be doing is dancing in their kitchen. Good right now. Yeah, so it kind of like, it sat on shelves for quite a while, didn't it, that one?
Oh, this recipe needs flour. No chance of that.
Yeah.
This recipe needs eggs. Oh, can't get those.
Yeah, that's not good timing, is it? But who knew?
From all of that, like you said, coming full circle now having the restaurant, how is that working? Because, I mean, I can't even say we've dabbled. We've dabbled in the idea of restaurants.
Yeah.
And we have lots of friends and mates who run them.
Yeah.
How's it going? As a noob to that world, have you learned?
We're 6 months in and I just, on reflection, I'm crazy. And I shouldn't let people gas me up in this way. Because wow, what an experience.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm really sad for the customers that came in the first 3 months, and I wish I could invite them all back and give them free meals, because I knew absolutely nothing. Like, that's the truth of the matter. The day that we launched, we didn't have enough food. We opened at 1 p.m. We ran out of food by like 2 p.m. And the concept being all you can eat, I kind of should have known that it was gonna be booming in terms of people wanting to come and try this, because there's a reason there isn't a Caribbean all you can eat. And it's because oxtail is expensive. And the community moan a lot, because you're never going to get the taste that you get in your house when you're cooking 5 kg of oxtail.
Yeah.
And when you go to a restaurant and I'm cooking 35 kg of it, like, it's never going to taste the same.
I imagine each family has a different spin or a different way of doing it anyway.
Absolutely. But because of the concept, it was always going to be super busy. So I didn't realise, but the size of the kitchen is not big enough to facilitate the concept. So we can't operate at 100% capacity. And in the first couple of months, because we were like, I announced that this was happening, and the restaurant was fully booked for about 2 weeks. And in those first 2 weeks, we had 100% customers, and the kitchen was just too small to churn out all you can eat for those guys. So we had people coming in who just didn't get to eat at all, who had sat waiting for an hour and a half and then left just starving and furious. And so it was bad, because I didn't do enough due diligence, I guess, on what it was going to look like in real time.
I just thought it was going to be my pals and the local community popping in just out of intrigue to see. I never expected it to be booming. And then we had an influencer come in, and I didn't know she was an influencer, but she came in and she did a video, and then it went viral on TikTok. And then in September, the restaurant then was sold out till March 2024, which is now. So next week is our last week of customers that booked in September and October 2023. You couldn't get a book in. We had
amazed herself. The health inspector got a table.
I can't believe Ben managed to get himself in.
Honestly.
Must have been a last minute cancellation.
Well, luckily, what happens now is because people made those bookings in September and October, some of them have completely forgotten.
Yeah.
So I email now on the week of and say, you've got this reservation, you need to reconfirm it.
Yeah.
And those that don't reconfirm, I cancel them.
Did you expect to be doing this bit of the job? Like, if you're pinging out emails and taking out the bins.
No.
I'm front of house, I'm welcoming everyone into the party and the food.
People come in and they're like, I didn't know you worked here. And I'm like, yes, how else do you think the place runs? Like, and they're like, oh, props to the chef. I'm like, it's me, I'm the chef. They're like, you cooked all this? And I'm like, yes. And then they see my son in the corner and they're like, oh, you, and I'm like, yes, I picked him up from school, came back, carried on cooking. Now I'm front of house, like, serving you. Later on, I'm going to be shutting down the till and cleaning the place up. Like, every single element I've had to get involved in. But I realised that the reason why, again, it wasn't working very well in the first couple of months is because I wasn't doing everything. I think when you launch a new business, you have to know the intricate details. You have to know the ins and outs. You have to know how to bring someone into the restaurant, use the booking system to seat them, get their drinks orders in, put it on the system, make the drink if needs be, you know, do a toilet check if needs be, cook the food if needs be, serve the food if needs be. You have to know how to do every single element of it because people will let you down.
Yeah.
And so when there were days where it's like, oh, the bar girl's not coming, it's like, okay, well, I need to know how to make a lychee martini right now. Or there'd be a day that we had
an amazing...
It's crazy. I'm crazy.
All-consuming and it sounds nightmarish, but what an amazing sort of... When you're increasing the skills in your tool set.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like...
That feels good.
Difference and where you'll be and what you'll be able to do moving forward through sort of real life learning and figuring it out on the job.
Yeah.
I mean, what an amazing, like we said, start the restaurant, you only live once. I mean, look at the position that you're in and going to be in because of learning on the job.
But isn't there a massive juxtaposition between, like, from the PR side of your PR business, where you're hyping things up, telling amazing stories, to then you're in a restaurant grinding away.
Yeah.
There are two ends of the different of the spectrum, where you're selling a dream and then living the dream, which is very different.
Yep.
That's where I think sometimes restaurants have a really tough gig because they have to act like the world is really beautiful and wonderful and food's going to flow out so easily because it makes people want to come.
Mm.
The fact of the matter is you're grafting behind the scenes and it's really
you're scrubbing
tough.
The oven.
Doing the bins.
Yeah, absolutely. There was like the first like 2 months, I was literally being carried out by my boyfriend because the soles of my feet were in so much pain from just standing up all night. It was brutal.
To combat that, have you embraced the Crocs?
That is all we wear in there.
Yeah, I was going
to... That's all we wear. Well, I tried to go to the little shop next door and get like their fake version. No, it has to be the real Croc.
It just don't work. Yeah.
Otherwise, it don't work. I've got every Croc.
I've
got them in every colour. Nice. Yeah, Crocs.
So obviously, you're already thinking about the next
restaurant number
right?
two. Do you know what? I wish I wasn't, but I am. I don't know what's wrong with me now. Yeah.
The bit that's always bothered me with like my thing with chefs is it is a crazy industry to go into. You have to. The love you have for that industry has to be so much deeper than so many other industries. I've always said to my wife now is that with our little boy, he can grow up to be whatever he wants to be. But with our knowledge...
We're not a chef.
With our knowledge of chefs, I'd say, don't be a chef. Well, not don't be a chef. Just if he said, I want to be a chef, I'd be like, oh, this is going to be a long journey.
Yeah.
And same as like if he said, I want to go into theatre. My wife worked in theatre for ages and it's a cruel, really tough world.
Yeah.
You've got to go in and you've got to go in with so much love to combat the hard times to make it worth its while.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And the fact that you would go again is crazy.
It's madness, but I'm addicted now. Like, I'm in it and I love it. And there's also this energy of, like, when a customer comes in and you serve them and then you're watching them have amazing food, and or you're walking out to do a shop run and they're like, oh, this is good, isn't it? And like you're just hearing the whispers and seeing the satisfied faces. And it's always funny because people come in with all this energy, all you can eat Caribbean, I'm gonna eat you out of your oxtail. And I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah, you're not gonna get past round two. And they're like, no way, I'm gonna get round 5, 6, 7. And I'm like, all right, mate. And then round two, they're like, can we get the bill? Yeah. And there's always this satisfaction of seeing them go from coming in with all this energy to like sat like this down in their chair with their button open, and I'm like, you're full up, aren't you?
why was the all you can eat thing?
Because I like to eat a little bit of everything. Okay. It really frustrates me when I go to a restaurant and it's like, you can get lamb chops and rice, but what if I want some chips? Like, you've got to order that separately.
Business-wise, commercially-wise, isn't that a risk?
Oh, it's a terrible idea. Like, I'm bleeding money by the second. Those are the things that I should have checked before I set out on this journey. But I'm so stubborn, like, I won't go back on it. Like, I'm like, all right, cool. It is what it is. These are the prices that we set for ourselves. These are the foods that we have for the all-you-can-eat. And I know this is how many customers we need a day to break even. This is how many hours we need to be open to break even. This is how many Sunshine Run punches we need to sell per day to break even. And then, cool, now that the restaurant just breaks even, what are the things that I can do to actually now turn it into a profitable business? Because obviously as director, you can't pay yourself. So I'm just slugging away there for free. Mm. And I'm like, okay, at some point, this is going to need to make more sense than this. So I've got like, we've got reggae karaoke launching. We're running a cooking school there. We're doing, there's like loads of other stuff happening.
Can we make sure we send Evers there again on a reggae night? Oh, yeah. Karaoke night. That'd be amazing.
So good. I can imagine him singing along.
Yeah. I mean, if you didn't get you shut down the first time,
possibly. All of those things, I'm like, but to me, I'm now super excited because the I'm a marketeer, like that's what gets me going. And I haven't had a chance to market the restaurant because it's been sold out, so there's been no need to say, oh, by the way, we're here. We're actually saying, we're not here, don't come today. Like, no, we don't accept walk-ins, which made everyone super angry because what restaurant doesn't accept walk-ins? So now that it's actually like calmed down and it's in a place where we've reopened the bookings and it's like, cool, brand new people can now book the place. Now I'm like, right, now that that's all steady and it's breaking even, let me start launching the sexy things, like the reggae karaoke, like the cooking school. Like, we did a cooking school for kids on Pancake Day. So kids during the half term was able to come for free with their parents and we just did pancakes for hours. And they just had an amazing time. And those are the things that I want to do.
Are you teaching as well?
Yeah, I'm teaching the cooking school.
For goodness sake, is there anything you don't do?
That's essentially, you've drawn upon every bit of the journey so far.
Yeah.
From the music to the teaching to the food to the marketing, the PR, the events, the live music growing up, and putting it into now almost like your baby, your restaurant.
Yeah, and that's what all my mates have said. They're like, everything that you did up until this point has led to this moment. Because I was like, oh, I probably will go back to the music industry in a couple of years. I'm not feeling it right now. And they're like, I don't think you will. Everything that you did there was for this moment. Yeah. And I'm starting to see it now, like how the whole, you know, 16 years that I spent in music has built up to this. But one thing I did always say I was going to have was a building. I always said I'm going to have a building. And one thing I'm definitely going to do in that building is youth work or mentoring kids. I didn't know what else would be happening. I thought maybe a studio for musicians, or it was all kind of music centric. But I did know I'm going to have a building that is going to be a safe space for kids. So when I did that cooking school, the pancake one, I was like, this is it. I've got my building. The kids are here. They're enjoying themselves, making pancakes. This is a brilliant day. And I can like put a big tick in the box of just like self-achievement on that one.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the one thing I did know, that I was going to have a building and I was going to mentor kids in it.
And throughout all of that, I mean, what have you learned? Like, what do you take away from that entire experience up until now? And how will you take that into the next thing and where you want to take it?
Ooh. I mean, I've learned a lot, mainly that as much as you can't do everything, you need to know how to do everything. That is the main thing, because I met with a friend who runs a restaurant and he said the first thing you need is an operations manager. Like, do not set this up without one. So I was like, okay, cool. Well, he said I should do this. So yeah, let me get an operations manager. And then what I found were like, so she's currently off sick for a month. And so all the things that she knows that I don't know, I'm like, oh, how does this restaurant run now that you, all the information's in your head? So that is something I'm going to take with me, because it's all fun and well employing people to do stuff. But if, yeah, they're
redundant for whatever reason, you're screwed.
Yeah, literally. You've got to have humility as well to be able to to do that. I think
and
that's really
that was
good.
Another thing, letting go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Letting go of staff and saying, okay, I'm going to allow you to run this section was very difficult for me. You know, like the other day I was like, oh, why is there a lychee going into the rum punch? And she was like, that's how I've always made it. And I'm like,
Okay,
let me leave you to do what you do because this is your area of expertise. I'm just stepping back.
It's the biggest challenge when you build a business around love because it's hard to look. If you build a business around making money, then it's easy to bring people in. It's a commercial transaction to make someone take over.
Yeah.
When it's based on love, then suddenly it's
when you care.
Every single step of the way, it's really tricky. When did this podcast turn into Diary of a CEO?
I don't know.
I'm serious.
Well, we had like the best entrepreneur on the planet with us. There's nothing.
So you are juggling so much at the moment.
Yeah.
Why did you do a book now as well?
So second book, right?
Yeah.
Okay. This is crazy.
I don't know, speak to Carnival and Quarto about that. I didn't realize the timers were going to be slap bang on top of each other. Mm. And there were literally days where I was dropping my son to school, going to North London to do the shop, like prepping for the shop, leaving there, going to do the food shoot for the cookbook, and then coming back to the shop, and then going back to pick up my son, and then going back to the shop. Mm-hmm. And this is me going north, south, north, south, north, south. And those days were excruciating. I remember there was one day in particular where I was doing the food shoot and the operations manager messaged me and said, the health inspector's here.
Ebbers is back.
Ben's back.
Before Ben. Okay, Ben. The real health inspector was there and we'd been waiting for that day. Like, we'd been building up for that day. Like, one day, the health inspector's going to come to give you a food hygiene rating. You can't get on all the apps until you've got this food hygiene rating. And also, it's very important you get a good food hygiene rating.
Yeah.
So that day, I was there and I was shooting for this book and she messaged me and said that the hygiene officer was there. And I was like, oh my God, guys, I've got to leave. And they were like, you know, the energy in the room was like, you can't.
No, yeah,
like,
you
don't do this. No one wanted to say it, but it was like, don't. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God. And I called my agent and I was like, Crystal, what do I do? Like, I need to go back. And she was like, first of all, calm down. And then she was like, just tell them you need to leave and go and handle what you need to handle. Like, I'll deal with the fallout for it type thing. And then I went back in there. And I think just the time that I spent outside had calmed me down. I went back in there and everybody in there was just very calm and you could see all of the Polaroids on the wall of the recipes. And and I just thought to myself, do you know what? This is going to go how it goes. Me going there is not going to change anything. The guy's there now. Mm. It is what it is. Am I going to be able to tell him anything that the more experienced chefs in the kitchen are? Because the people that I'd employed at that time were super experienced chefs. I was the least experienced person in there, actually. And I thought to myself, you're going to ruin it. If you go there now, you're going to be the person that's going to get flustered and ruin it. You've got people in there who have got 16 years of experience one guy had, 25 years of experience the other guy had, and my mum was there, who was the most experienced. She's worked in every hotel, so I'm like,
let go again.
Leave it alone. This is out of your control. And if you get there flustered, you're going to be the one that messes it up. So I said, okay, I'm not coming. And then they were like, way, like, don't leave, don't go. Stay here, do this. This is important. This is amazing. You know, we're filling you with love in this room. This cookbook's going to be amazing. And they just filled me with love and energy. So shout out the Quarto team. But I just let it go. And then I didn't know that you get the result the same day. So when I did leave and I went back to the shop, she's like, it went cool. Like, he'll be back in 5 hours with the result. And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, oh, we get the result today. And I'm like,
it's like a driving test.
Way.
Yeah.
And I was like, how are we going to function for the next 5 hours? Like, and she was just like, mate, I don't know. But we've got customers coming in.
And what was the result?
On some days. Five stars. And I was like, yes, big up my mom because she just drove that like all the way through. And because our other chef is St. Lucia and he doesn't speak very well English. So I was like, they might be some, it might get things misconstrued or it might not answer something properly. Like there might be like a language barrier there. Like, and then we have one kid who is a little bit of a liability. Like he set fire to the place once. in our
accidentally.
Third week. Yeah, accidentally. His heart was in the right place, but the execution was all the way off. So he was there and he does tend to rub people up the wrong way. So I was like, there's no way we're gonna get like a five if he was there walking around with his headphones on and, you know, forgetting to put his apron on and whatnot and so forth. But we have
I keep saying we, I mean I, employed a load of kids from the local foster homes. So for a lot of them, it's their first job. And I refuse to get rid of them because I want you to have like at least 6 months experience in a job where you can now go off and say, oh, I was a kitchen porter for this restaurant, get a reference, amazing. And like just give you that first step. Do you know what I mean? But I was like, he's there on that day and he might mess everything up. If I go there, I might mess everything up. So the fact that when I got there, and you know, the guy came back, and when he came back, he double checked something. Like I think he'd said something about the food in the Bay Marie is only allowed to last 2 hours or something. So when he came back after 5 hours, he then checked that the food had been changed over, which it obviously had, and then was like, yeah, at five, you're good to go. And we were just like super celebrating because it was just so important to just have that co-sign and just for people to know that, you know, we're there, you know, we've passed our inspection. And in getting that place in Stoke Newington, I'd gone through other places in Stoke Newington and places in Shoreditch where I just experienced racism with landlords. So I just thought, do you know what? This is a good stamp that there's like a black owned Caribbean restaurant in Stoke Newington with a 5-star rating. And it was kind of a middle finger up to the landlords that I'd spoken to before, who thought that, you know, oh, the African seasoning's going to be too smelly, and just kind of was like looking down on what I was trying to do. So that was a proud moment.
Wow. The thing is that you must have been full of so much anxiety through that phase.
Yeah.
The fact you're willing to go again.
Madness.
But again, this time, I guess you've done it.
But I also, I've learned things. So like, I wouldn't do an all you can eat for £30. I would just price it individually.
40 quid.
Or do a platter. For 50 quid, like instead of just limiting myself to that. So I can imagine me opening it again in South London, more as a lounge as well, with like music and entertainment and a DJ and stuff like that. And then just bringing what I've got already in Octaves to another place at a slightly different theme. But Stoke Newington will always be the OG Octaves. That's where all the elders come and they're like, you have a soup? And they want their soup. You know, we have an old lady that comes in every day for her soup. And she never pays. She just comes in, soup, and we give her soup. And she gets some of her day. It will always be the OG spot.
Has this experience, like, damaged your relationship with food at all? In terms of what... It was so romantic beforehand. Suddenly... Yes. Okay, really?
Yeah, I've gone through phases, lots of phases with food, vegan, pescatarian, eating meat, whatnot and so forth. And the problem with the first time I did the book was that I was pescatarian. And I was like, well, I can't do this cookbook and only have pescatarian dishes. So I had to start eating meat again, which sometimes doesn't agree with my skin, just sometimes doesn't make me feel great, but it was something I had to do for the first book. So going into the second book, which is 80 recipes, I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to have a lot of meat. And then in the restaurant, you have to taste test everything before you send it out. So if I'm the chef and I'm making oxtail and chicken and curry goat, I can't not taste it before I send it out. I need to know that it's got all the right flavours. So I actually really badly want to just be a pescatarian again, but can't because I have to taste oxtail, curry goat and curry chicken every day. And then I taste it and it's so delicious.
This is such a niche problem, which we have the same thing,
but
we
have, just our food isn't good.
Between the four of us on camera, we have like all attempted different types of like approaches to food or diets. But end of the day, you've got to come back into the kitchen, you've got to represent kind of everyone's opinion on food. If it's in front of you, we have to eat it, because our job is to open our minds to understand the world of food and to share that with everybody else. Therefore, one day you sit there and go, I'm not going to eat meat for... Jamie did try to do veganuary, and like it was awful for him and us and for everyone involved.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, I can't eat this. Like, well, we're filming a video. We need your opinion and things.
Yeah. So
it's a ridiculous situation to be in.
Yeah.
You do it for your job. And it's not a tough sacrifice to have to eat that food. But at the same time, the fact that your relationship has been bound by your work is crazy.
It's a lot. So like, I make sure in my spare time I'm eating the things that I really want to eat. It's quite overwhelming. But also the other day I realized that, just like my mum does, like I was going in the fridge and I'd see like eggs and this and that and the other, and I'm like, we don't have anything in this restaurant that has egg in it, why are there eggs in the fridge? And she's like, oh, you know, I just made myself an egg butty. And I'm like, actually, I can just cook what I want here. I can go across the road to Sutton's and Sons, which is literally across the road, and I can get any fish and I can cook it and eat whatever I want to eat. I don't have to eat everything that's here. Yeah. But it's just so difficult to say, let me taste this oxtail. Oh, it's delicious. Let me not have a bowl now.
Yeah.
And then after, I'm like, why did you do that? Like, have some fried fish and some prawns. Just taste it and leave it there. But the food's just so good.
Yeah.
If I may say so myself.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't say, you don't just say so yourself. Ebbers, who visited, says so herself. In fact, he was asking specifically about the goat curry.
Yes.
It's like, what on earth do you put in that to make it taste so good? He said, firstly, there's tons of meat.
Yes.
It's really tender. Mm-hmm. And then there's like the sauce, the gravy sauce.
Yeah.
Can you, I mean, obviously you don't want to give away too many insights, but can you just describe how it's prepared?
So it's cooked down for 3 hours.
Okay, that'd be the reason. Yeah.
It's cooked down for 3 hours. So is the oxtail. These dishes are not quick dishes. And the marinade's about 2 days worth of marinade. So a green seasoning, which is, you know, your onions, your garlic, your bell peppers, your scotch bonnet, all of that fun stuff.
Well, what liquid are you binding that? Is that an oil or is that just rubbed
oil,
on?
Oil, like, bit of vinegar
and
water. And funnily enough, like, you're supposed to brown the meat when you're making oxtail or you're making goat. Mm. But because in the marinade there's oil, I don't brown it with oil. I brown it with water and sugar, which doesn't have the exact same effect, but it still lets it, you know, burn, mm-hmm. still gives the sugar to burn and caramelizes it to avoid the dish being oily. So that's why the gravy is so thick instead of being oily or watery.
And you get some of that sweetness from the sugar as well.
And you get them, and you get some of that. And then, just curry powder. I always use Better Pack. I don't use any other curry powder. That is the curry powder. And turmeric, cumin, lots of thyme, the herb. Even though it does take lots of time. And those are the main elements, bay leaves, cloves, and just, it's just something you really have to love to do because you have to stir that pot every 20 minutes, fill it with water if needs be, the right amount of water so you're not draining it, give it a stir constantly. And I'm cooking probably like 20 kg at a time. It's a massive pot and I have this massive metal stick that I have to get in there and push it all around and get it all in there. But it is literally just about the TRC when you're cooking it down. Like, don't just fill it with water and leave it there. Like, revisit that pot every 20 minutes, give it a stir, give it a taste test, you know, add more salt, add more pepper, add more scotch bonnet if needs be. Like, it's a relationship making that
is
curry
goat. Is it an easy one to scale down? Because you're making it for, a whole restaurant. But making it at home for two, is it easy?
It is easier to scale down.
And that's in the book?
It's in the book.
Okay.
Yeah. It's in the book. I mean, you wouldn't buy like oxtail or goat for one. You would buy it for like a minimum of four people because it does take that cooking time. But when you make it a smaller batch, you can get it down to like 2 hours.
Decent.
Right, okay. Well, there's a question that we ask everyone to finish this.
Mm-hmm.
What is the one dish that you say that everyone must cook and experience once in their life?
Macaroni cheese.
Great answer. Okay.
Yeah, in just whatever way you make it, everybody has to have had a macaroni cheese in their life. It's just such a good dish.
As a main or as a side? Because it's one of those things I've been given it as a side. I go, no, I need this as a main. This is a full.
Yeah, but the best thing is if you
portion.
Get a big side. And then you're like, I get to eat all of this. And then I've got a massive slab of macaroni cheese here as well.
Yeah.
With lobster in it.
My little boy's favourite meal in the world. He just goes mad for it. Once I made,
here we go.
Pizza, mac and cheese pizza.
Oh my God.
Whereas
you're like one of those TikTok accounts where like, they split the screen and then have a real chef slagging off whatever they're doing. And
we gave him mac and cheese. We were having pizzas and you went, I want that on that. And I went, brilliant.
He's a maverick.
This is a mini sorted episode. So I just slapped his meal on my pizza and just gave it to him. He's like, this is the best thing ever. Now,
oh my God, I'm
he goes
do
every
that.
Night for mac and cheese pizza.
I'm going to do that. But I would say as a side.
As a
mac and cheese as a side.
I'd say mac and cheese as a side. Okay. I think everybody has to. I just feel like that is a basic dish that everybody should be able to cook. Just the basic version of it. Like when I did the cooking school recently, a lady came on the Valentine's Day cooking school and I said, right, we're going to make a classic mac cheese. And I said, yeah, we're going to literally just put some butter in, put some flour in, give it a stir, put the milk in, season it, all-purpose seasoning, bit of mixed herbs, some cayenne pepper, some Cajun pepper, and cheese. And she was like, what about the onions? What about the garlic? Yeah. What about this, that, the other? And I was like, mate, you don't need any of that. This is just a classic mac. But everybody has a different way of making their macaroni cheese, which is perfectly fine. Just know how to make one.
It's just the sauce. There's some people I know who, like, don't appreciate what goes into just making a good sauce. Mm. They buy it in a packet and something like. You learn how to make a basic roux or any basic sauce with a little bit of flour to thicken it.
Yeah.
Suddenly, everything. There's a reason why a saucier is the most important role in the kitchen. Great answer.
Mac and cheese, strong answer. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for the rum punch.
You're most welcome.
To Cyan, Ray, and nephews.
I've smashed mine. Everybody's going back and get some more.
I'm not going to be able to see in a minute.